We're on Ayin Vav, Amid Aleph, at the second line, the second last word on the line where it says, Amar Rav Yehuda Mer Shmuel. The Pasuk states, Lo Yavo Fitzua Daka Ucharus Shafcha Mekahal Hashem. Essentially, it means that if a man's male anatomy has been damaged to the point where he is not able to father a child, then he may not marry a regular woman from the congregation. And we learned yesterday that if the man's aver is punctured, he could potentially be deemed a tzuadak on that basis. The Gemara today begins with the following ruling. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Nikav V'nistam. Say the man's aver became punctured, but then the hole sealed. The halacha is Kol She'ilu Nikri V'nikra Pasul. If the seal is so tenuous that if the person were to experience a seminal discharge, the force of that would cause whatever is sealed up the hole to disintegrate, and the semen would exit via the hole, and the person would remain disqualified as a petzua daka, because if the semen is exiting from this hole in the aver, meaning not the way it naturally exits, it's going to drip out as opposed to shoot out like an arrow. And this cannot lead to conception. So he's not able to father a child, so he would be disqualified to marry into the congregation. Be'ilav kosher. But otherwise, if it properly was sealed up, allowing the semen to exit the regular way, then he would remain fit to marry into the congregation. Where seeks further clarification. Havi bar Rava. Rava asked, Heicha, where in this man's aver was the hole located? Ilema lemata me'atara. If you say below the atara, meaning in the glands, the fleshy end of the aver, the atara is like the raised border of the aver, and the aver is pointing down to the ground. So lamata me'atara means that, okay, maybe this hole is in the fleshy part at the end of the male organ, but Rava says that wouldn't make any sense. Surely a hole in this area would not cause any disqualification for a filu nichras nami. Our Mishnah stated that even if the tip part is cut off completely, as long as a little bit of that remains, the person would not be deemed a psudaka. In addition, Rava assumes that we're not talking about a hole located above the atara, meaning in the aver on the actual shaft, you know, closer to the body. For Rava assumes that in such a case, the semen would never exit from that hole, because there's not enough force for that to happen. Rather, this has to be, you know, further away from the body, in a place where the semen gathers up and builds up more, you know, pressure of a force to possibly exit from the hole. So Rava concludes, Ela be'atara atzma. Oh, it must be, Shmuel is referring to, when this man's aver was punctured at the atara itself, like the raised border where the fleshy part of the end begins, the hole is there, so this is a spot in the aver where, you know, damage cannot be simply disregarded. Already, you know, starts to be a problem there. And then you have this additional factor that this is close to the natural exit point of the semen where it gathers up. And so if it's punctured in this spot, this could be grounds to deem him a p'tzua daka. And the Gemara notes that indeed it's marnami. This understanding of Shmuel's ruling is corroborated by the following Amar of Mari Bar Mar. Amar Mar Ukva Amar Shmuel. He said, Nikiv be'atara atzma v'nistam. So this rendition of Shmuel's ruling, he says explicitly that if the man's aver were punctured in the atara area, the raised border where the fleshy part at the end begins, if it got punctured there and then some kind of seal formed, the halacha is kol she'ilu nikra v'nikra pasal v'ilav kasher, as we said above. Depends on how well that seal is going to hold up in the event of a seminal discharge. If it won't, and the semen is going to come dripping out of that hole, then the person would be deemed a p'tzua daka, would not be fit to marry into the congregation. The Gemara asks a follow-up question. Shalach le Rava bereid de Rabba le Rav Yosef. Rava, the son of Rabba, sent the following question to Rav Yosef. Yilamdenu Rabbeinu heichi avdinan. Said, Rabbi, teach us, what do we do if an actual case of this comes before us, and we want to determine whether the seal that formed over the puncture would withstand a seminal discharge, how can we go about arousing the person to the point that he would have a seminal discharge? Amr Leir of Yosef answered, Maisina nama chamima desare manchinen le abe pukri umikri. He says, we put some hot barley bread in the person's anus, and that will cause a seminal discharge. And when that occurs with chazinen le, we'll be able to observe what happens to make a halachic determination. Amr Abaye objects to this approach. Otu kuli alma Yaakov avinu havai, chziv bei kochi voracious oni, shalo ra keri miyamav. Is the average person on the level of Yaakov avinu, but whom it's written, Yaakov avinu said to Reuven, you're my voracious oni, my initial vigor. And Chazal explain that what it means is that Yaakov Avinu's firstborn Reuven was born from Yaakov Avinu's first ever seminal discharge, which happened only when he got married at the age of 84. So what he's saying is that, okay, for a person like Yaakov Avinu, who had remained in a celibate for so many years, we could perhaps understand why a person would have to go to such lengths to bring about a seminal discharge. But, of course, the average person is not on the level of holiness of Yaakov Avinu. The average person who is, you know, more sexually active wouldn't require going to such lengths to bring about a seminal discharge. So we shouldn't have to do this, Abai objects. Elam Rabai, rather Abai says, how can we accomplish it? Mavrinan kamei bigdei tzivonen. We arouse him, bring him to seminal discharge by passing women's clothing before him, which will cause him to have thoughts of sexual nature, and it'll bring him to a seminal emission. But Amrava Rava objects to Abai's approach, Otu kule alma Barzilai Giladihu. But is everybody like Barzilai Giladi, the character in Shmuel Beis who assisted David HaMelech in his time of need? The Pasuk says about Barzilai Giladi that he didn't age well. He looked very, very old. He was worn down. Chazal explained that this can be caused by a person being steeped in immorality, steeped in taiva. So this was true of Barzilai Giladi. So Rava says maybe for a person like that who is so steeped in taivas nashim, bringing the women's clothing before him would be enough to bring about a seminal discharge, but he is an outlier. That's not what the average person is like. So therefore Rava concludes, Elam mechavarti kedishanim ekara. The first method, the one with the hot barley, is the better method to use. When our sites are related, Braisa, Tanu Rabbanan, the Rabbanan Tanane Braisa, as we said above, Nikav, Apostle, Mipnei Shehu Shoseis. If a man's Se'ever becomes punctured in the manner described above, he is deemed unfit to marry into the congregation, for then the semen drips out of that hole, and so he will not be able to father a child. But once again, nistam kasher. If it properly seals up, then he will be deemed fit once again to marry into the congregation. Mipnei shehu molid. For once it's sealed up, he'll be able to father a child again. And the Braisa remarks, v'zehu psol shechozer lehechsherum. In this case, we have an instance where the hole created a halachic disqualification, but the sealing up of that hole returned the person to a state of halachic fitness. The Gemara explains, Zehu l'me'ute mai, when the Braisa stresses that in this case, once the hole is sealed up, it rectifies the issue, as opposed to in which other case, the Gemara explains, l'me'ute kurum sha'ala machmas maka berea the eino kurum. The Braisa is saying it as opposed to where a kosher animal's lung got punctured, where the halacha is, even if some scar tissue forms to seal that hole, in the eyes of the halacha, that is not an adequate sealing of the hole. It's not going to hold. And so the practical implication of this is that if upon checking the lungs of an animal that was slaughtered, a scar tissue is found, then the animal is deemed a trefa. Of course, if an animal is a trefa, that means even if it had a proper shechita, the meat isn't kosher. Once again, we said that if a man's organ was punctured, but subsequently that became properly sealed up, then that wouldn't be a problem. He would become halachically fit again. Where relates how the Amoraim discussed how we could intervene and produce the desired income of the puncture sealing up. Shalach le'Rav Idi bar Avin le'Abaye. Rav Idi bar Avin sent a question to Abaye, Hechi avdinan, what can we do? How could we intervene to encourage the process of such a puncture sealing up? Abaye sent his response that we do as follows. Me'sinan seharta me'sartinan le'. The first step is we take a barley kernel and use that to scratch the area of the puncture to cause bleeding. The objective here is to stimulate the flesh to rejuvenate and form connective tissue. Then, Mycenon tarba v'shayfinon. We bring some fats and smear that on the wound, the puncture. Then, Mycenon shumshana gamla menachtinan le. We bring a nice big ant and put its head in the hole and have it bite down there so that its head now is stuck in the hole. Then, paskinan le l'reshe, we cut off its head. So you have the big ant head stuck in the hole, forming a temporary seal in the hope that the body will sort of take over and form that connective tissue as the ant's head disintegrates. The Gemara notes Vidavka Sa'artam should specifically use a barley kernel for the first step of scratching and causing it to bleed to encourage the formation of the connective tissue. Aval Parzala Mizrav Zarif. We shouldn't use a steel blade, anything of that sort, because that could just make things worse. It could just worsen the wound and not get us to where we want to get of the hole here being properly sealed up with connective tissue. Whereas another point, Vahani Mili Katan. The above method could only be effective in the case of a small puncture of a gadol, but in the case of a large one, it's not going to work. For Mikpuli Mikpal, even if some connective tissue forms, it will not hold up. Another ruling on the topic of Suadaka Amaraba Barafuna says Hamatal Mayi Mishte Makomos regarding a person who has a condition in which he urinates from two places. So this is continuing with the understanding we saw yesterday of the Gemara that there are two different tubes, one through which the semen passes, another through which the urine passes. That is not what we find today in the male anatomy. In any case, there's some kind of a condition here where it seems to pass through both tubes due to some injury this person sustained. Rabbi Barafuna rules pasul. He is deemed a psudaka. He may not marry into the congregation. For Rabbi Barafuna understands that such a person will not be able to father a child. However, Amar Rava, Rava said, "Less hilchasa lo kebarav lo keabo." We don't rule like the son or the father, meaning like Rabbi Barafuna nor his father Rafuna. Where elaborates Barah de Maran, clearly when he says we don't rule like the son, he means that we do not rule in accordance with this statement we just quoted from Rabbi Barafuna. Rather, the one who urinates from both places remains fit to marry into the congregation. For such a person is able to father a child. And Abba, nor do we rule like Rabba's father Rafuna. What does this refer to? The Gemara explains, the Amar of Huna, Nashim Hamisololos Zu Bezu. If women engage in lesbian relations, Psulos Lekahuna. Through that act, they become disqualified to the Kahuna. The women would not be permitted to subsequently marry a Kohen. For Rav Huna's understanding, the behavior they engaged in puts them in the category of a Zona, who a Kohen may not marry. Rava says we don't rule this way. For Vafilu Rabbi Elazar di Amar Panoi HaBaal HaPenuya Shalo L'Shem Ishos Asa Zona, even according to Rabbi Elazar, who has a relatively broad definition of the case of Zona, he understands that merely by the fact that a couple had relations outside of marriage, that would cause the woman to be deemed a zona. She would be prohibited to a kohen. But even Rabbi Elazar will agree that in our case, these women would not be classified as zonos for hani mili ish. It's only possible for a woman to become a zona as a result of a promiscuous relationship with a man, which is considered a proper intercourse of al isha pritzusa ba'alma. But if she engaged in sexual activity this way with another woman, in the eyes of the halacha, that is merely licentious behavior, but not an actual act of intercourse, and thus not something that renders her a zona prohibited to a kohen. Begin the next Mishnah. The Mishnah states, Pitzua dako chirus shavcha mutarin b'giyores u'mushuchreres. A man who has been classified as a pitzua dako chirus shavcha has suffered a kind of injury that now he can't father a child, and so now cannot marry into a kahal Hashem, into the congregation. However, he may marry a convert or a woman who was a slave woman who was emancipated. Of course, either of these women are considered fully Jewish. With regards to this type of Ptzua Daka prohibition, they're not, quote-unquote, deemed as part of the congregation. And ve'inin asurin alimi lavo ba'kahal. The halach is Ptzua Daka chushavcha, man is only prohibited from marrying into the regular congregation, meaning like native Jewish people, shenemar, as the pasuk states, lo yavo ptzua daka uchirus shavcha b'kahal Hashem. Prohibition is that this person wounded in a way that he can't father a child anymore may not marry into kahal Hashem. And again, the halacha says that with respect to this type of prohibition, a convert or emancipated slave woman is not deemed to be part of kahal Hashem. They therefore may marry a ptzua daka man. Where it begins by asking about a variant case, bo minei merav sheshes, they ask Rav Sheshes, ptzua daka kohen. Say we have a man who became ptzua daka. This man is also a kohen. And of course, normally a kohen is prohibited to marry a woman who is a convert or a woman who is a slave woman who was then freed, because of the assumption that she engaged in illicit relations prior to her conversion or emancipation, so she is considered a zona. So kohen normally cannot marry such a woman, but here where this kohen is a ptzua daka, mahu b'giyoros u'mushuchreres, may he marry a convert or emancipated slave woman. The issue is whether we say b'kedushase ka'i v'asir. Do we say that notwithstanding this man's ptzua daka status, he still fully remains with his kohanic sanctity, and he may therefore not marry her? Oh, Dilma la b'kedushase ka'i v'shari. Or maybe, due to his ptzua daka status, he isn't at least fully considered a kohen, in the sense, at least, that the women who are specifically forbidden to kohanim are not forbidden to this man. And so perhaps he would be allowed to go ahead and marry this convert or emancipated woman. Amalu Rav Sheshes replied, Tanisua. The answer to your question is found in the following brisa, which states, Ptzua daka Yisrael mutter b'nesina. Regular Yisrael, not a kohen, who became ptzua daka, got injured, he can't father a child. So of course he can't marry a regular woman from the congregation. The brisa rules he may, however, marry a Nesina woman, meaning that she is a descendant of the Givon people, one of the seven Kanani nations. The story is related in Sefer Yeshua, how these Chivi people, one of the seven Kanani nations, living in the town of Givon, heard about the conquest of Bnei Israel. They were successfully conquering parts of Canaan. And they heard about all of this, they hatched the plot, and they went and deceived Yeshua and the leaders to agree to allow them to convert. They pretended they were from some faraway land, that they were not one of the Kanani nations who would not be allowed to convert. And they tricked Bnei Israel into allowing them to convert and to take an oath that they wouldn't be harmed. The ruse was discovered later, but they made an oath. They didn't want to make a chil Hashem, and so they did not expel them. And once they converted, but they're essentially admitted to second-class citizens. It says Yeshua made them the woodchoppers and the water carriers, hence the name Nasin. It says Vayitneim Yoshua. Yeshua gave them over, appointed them to be the woodchoppers, the water carriers. The Mishnah later Ein Chesem Beis states that it is prohibited for a regular Jew to marry a Nasin person. Yet this Brisa rules that a Ptzua Daka Jewish man may marry a Nesina, a female Nasin person. So Sheshes points out, if you say that the fact that a person's tzedakah does not cause him to lose the sanctity he's born with in terms of his restrictions of which women he could marry, then how would this halacha make any sense? Why would the Braisa allow this Jewish man to marry Nesina Ikri Khan Losis Chatein Bam? When the Pasuk expressly prohibits a Jew from intermarrying with any descendant of the seven Kenani nations. And Rav Sheshes understands the Pasuk to mean that even if this descendant from one of the seven Kenani nations converts, it's still prohibited to marry that person. So how do we understand that a Pitzuadaka Jewish man could marry a Nesina woman? This woman descended from one of the Kenani nations. So apparently, becoming a Pitzuadaka, that event of not being able to marry into the wider congregation, regular Jewish woman, does impact the person's sanctity and causes a loosening of the restrictions in terms of which women he could marry. Therefore, this Yisrael man could marry a Nesina. The prohibition of Losis Chatin Bam doesn't apply to him anymore. And so likewise, and presumably, in the case of a Kohen who became a Pitzuadaka, his sanctity too is thereby reduced, and now the special Kohanic prohibitions of women that Kohanim normally may not marry do not apply to this person. So Rav Sheshes states, this Braisa proves that a Kohen Pitzuadaka may go ahead and marry a convert or an emancipated slave woman. The Gemara questions this proof. Amar Rava. Rava objected, Atu Hasam Mishim Kedusha V'Lav Kedushahu. Is the understanding of Rav Sheshes of this prohibition of Losis Chatein Bam correct? That it is simply a prohibition that stems from a Jew's sanctity, that the sanctity of a Jew is such that it is not appropriate that he go and marry a person who descended from one of the Kenani nations, meaning that it's very similar to the concept that a Kohen cannot marry certain women. Rava argues that that's not the reason for this prohibition of Losis Chatein Bam. Rather, the reason why the Torah forbids a Jew from intermarrying with one of the seven Kenani nations is the specific concern that Dilma Molid Ben Va'ozal Palach La'Vodas Kochavim. If he marries a person from one of these idolatrous nations, well, they'll have a child, and that child will very likely turn to a life of idol worship. So meaning it's not about the man who takes that Kenani woman, it's about what will happen to the children they have. They'll probably follow in the ways of the Kenanim. Accordingly, V'hani Mili B'yosan of the Kochavim. The biblical prohibition of Losis Chatibam only applies as long as they remain idol worshippers. But Ki Megairi, if they convert to Judaism, with the Mitzvah Sashas emendation here, Mishra Sharu. According to biblical law, it would be permissible for a Jew to marry a woman from one of the Kenani nations who converted. But as we said, the Mishan Ein Ches and Bey states that a Jew may not marry a Nesina woman even if she converted. And why is that? V'rabbanan hu degazer behu. The Rabbanan decreed that prohibition. The decree from David HaMelech, as the Gemara will discuss there. But now we have a whole new explanation as to why a Jewish man who is a Pitzuadaka may marry a Nesina. The reason for that is V'chi gozer behu Rabbanan b'hanech de b'nei alodi. The Rabbanan limited their decree to Jewish men who are able to father children. Because after all, the biblical form of the prohibition to Kenani women is all about what will happen to the children. Avol ha'idelav bar ludi lo gozer b'rabbanan. But this one, this Pitzuadaka man who will not be able to father children, was never part of the rabbinic decree. For the Rabbanan, you'll model their decree after the nature of the biblical prohibition, which again is all about what will happen to the children. This man can't have children. So the Rabbanan said a Pitzuadaka man may marry a Nesina woman. And there was no indication from that halacha that when a person becomes a Pitzuadaka, his sanctity in terms of the women he could marry is lowered. The Gemara questions Rava's explanation of this halacha, pointing at Ella Me'ata. If Rava's understanding is correct, Mamzer de Bar Eludi Hachinami de Asir, can we conclude then that in the case of a man who is a mamzer, who is born of an illicit relationship, let's say of adultery, that since his issue has nothing to do with fertility, he can have children. So according to Rava, should we conclude that he is part of the rabbinic decree, he may not marry a nesina? That's what would seem to follow, according to Rava's understanding, where the problem is, v'hatinan. In fact, we learn in the Mishnah Kiddushin, that mamzerim unesinim mutarim lavo ze bazeh. The Mishnah says there explicitly that a mamzer may marry a nesina woman. So this appears to refute Rava's explanation. And so Rava revises and says, Ella kigazu rabbanon bikshir. He maintains that biblically speaking, a Jewish man may marry a woman descended from one of the Canaan nations who was converted to Judaism. The Rabbanan decreed that the Jewish man may not marry a Nesina woman, even though she has converted. But in what case the Rabbanan say that that rule applies? Only Biksherim, only to Jews who are able to marry a regular Jewish woman of the congregation. Bipsulim lo gazu Rabbanan. But the Rabbanan simply did not apply their decree to a person who is unable to marry a regular Jewish woman, and therefore a Jewish man who became a Pitzua Daka is allowed to marry a Nesina woman. But once again, the point is, it doesn't prove that becoming a Pitzua Daka causes a loss of sanctity that would allow, let's say, a Kohen Pitzua Daka to marry a convert. The word says, Hada Amar Rava, after further consideration, Rava later said, Lav Milsahi, the explanation I previously suggested that the biblical prohibition of Los Ischatin Bam specifically applies to a descendant of one of the Canaanite nations who has not converted. I realize now that that understanding is not correct. For Behiyosan Ovde Kochavim Les Lehuchasnos, while people of the Canaanite nations remain Canaanim, idol worshippers, as long as they have not yet converted, the institution of a Jewish marriage is simply inapplicable in the case of such a union. It's not possible for a Jew to effect the halachic kedushin with a non-Jew. Is gairu islu chasnas. Of course, if the person converts, then the institution of a halachic marriage would be applicable. It would be possible to effect the halachic marriage. And so Rava concluded that the pasuk that says, "I shall not effect the halachic marriage with them," must be specifically referring to a Canaanite person who has already converted. In that situation, the Torah says, even though marriage is a possibility, you are not allowed to marry this person. So that means that a regular Jewish man is biblically forbidden to marry a Nesina woman even after she has converted, and yet the Braisa rules that a Pitzua Daka Jewish man is allowed to marry a Nesina woman. That can only be due to the fact that upon becoming a Pitzua Daka, this Jew lost some amount of sanctity such that it's no longer inappropriate for him to marry a Nesina woman. And thus we may conclude that a Kohen who became a Pitzua Daka will be permitted to marry a convert or an emancipated slave woman. So Rava is concluding that the words in the Torah of Los Ischatin Bam mean you shall not effect a legally binding halachic marriage with any such women. And where it challenges this definition, Masiv Rav Yosef, questioned this from the pasuk in Malachim Aleph, which relates of Vayischatin Shalomo as Paro Melech Mitzrayim. The pasuk there does not contain the word Bas there. So it says that Shlomo Melech made the marriage alliance with the Paro of Mitzrayim. And it continues there, Vayikach es bas paro. And he went and took Paro's daughter in marriage. So Shlomo Melech took a non-Jewish woman as a queen. But of course, it's not possible to effect a halachic marriage with a non-Jewish woman. And yet, the pasuk describes that as Vayischatin. So this calls into question Rava's concluding argument that the language of Vayischatin, Los Ischatin, only refer to a halachically binding marriage. The Gemara answers, in fact, Yuri Gaira, Paro's daughter, converted before Shlomo Melech married her. So that pasuk too It means that this was an actual halachic marriage. The Gemara objects, V'ha lo kiblu gerim, lo bi mei David, v'lo bi mei Shlomo. Learn, the Braisa, this was quoted earlier in the Masechta on Chavdalet Amid Beis. The Braisa states that converts were not accepted during the days of David HaMelech or Shlomo HaMelech. In the latter case, because that was a time of great prosperity, and so the suspicion was that people were coming to convert not because they wanted to come and observe the Torah, but to benefit from the success and wealth of the Jewish people. So how could we say that Shlomo took a wife who converted? Our answer is, Midi hu taima l'shulchan melachim. Look, the whole reason that, as a general rule, we don't accept converts in a time like the time of Shlomo Melech is because that was a time of great prosperity. So maybe, again, they just want to benefit from that. They're not actually interested in keeping the Torah. Well, since that's the reason, turning to Amid Beis, that doesn't apply to the daughter of Paro. Surely she wasn't looking for some extra money. She wasn't, you know, in rough times. She was the daughter of Paro. Therefore, the above rule was not a reason to not accept her as a convert. But now the Gemara points out, tabula, one second, there's still a problem here that should preclude this marriage between Shlomo and Bas Paro from being a valid halachic marriage. The hamitris rishonahi, namely the fact, okay, she converted, that's fine, but she would then be a first generation Egyptian convert. And the Torah states clearly that an Egyptian convert may not marry into the congregation, nor may his children, only his children's children, the third generation from that original convert, may marry into the congregation. So it's still unclear how this could have been a proper halachic marriage, where it says v'chitim, and if you'll try and answer that, no, that issue is not applicable to the Bas Paro of the time of Shlomo HaMelech, for maybe you'll go with the theory that hanech azli la'alma v'hanech rini ninu, the people who in the time of Shlomo HaMelech resided in Egypt are not the ancient Egyptian people that the Torah was referring to when it taught this halacha that an Egyptian convert can't marry into the congregation. For the original Egyptians of the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim all died, a lot of them in the Yamsuf, and the rest of them died, and then new people came in and moved in. Accordingly, when the Torah talks about that you can't marry an Egyptian convert, the reference would be to the Egyptians who joined the Jewish people and converted at that time, the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Erev Rav. But the people living in Egypt today, and even in the time of Shlomo HaMelech, they're not included in the prohibitions. Maybe that could explain why upon her conversion, Shlomo HaMelech was able to halachically marry her. But the Gemara says this is not true. For V'ha Tanya, it was Tanei Braisa, Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda said, Min Yamin Ger Mitzri Hayali Chaver Mitalmidei Rabbi Akiva. I had a colleague, Min Yamin, who was an Egyptian convert from among the students of Rabbi Akiva. Amar, he said, Ani Mitzri Rishon, I'm a first-generation Egyptian convert, V'nasasi Mitzris Rishona. The woman I married to was a first-generation Egyptian convert. Asi libini Mitzris Shnia Kedeshi Ben Bini Roy Lavobako. I'm going to make sure to have my son marry a similar second-generation Egyptian convert so that my grandchild will be permissible to marry into the congregation, for if either parent would be first generation, we would follow that, you know, so to speak, more disqualified parent, and the child would not be permitted. But by ensuring that both the husband and wife are second generation Egyptian converts, that guarantees that the child will be third generation convert and permitted to marry into the congregation. The point is, we see from this that the issue of first and second generation Egyptian converts is still relevant today, and we don't understand that all of the original Mitzrim were replaced with people from elsewhere in the world. So the question is, how could you say Veischatein means a halachic marriage? How could Shlomo HaMelech have effected a halachic marriage to a first-generation Egyptian convert? The Gemara now answers, Omer HaPapa Anan Mishalom Aleku V'Nesiv. Are you going to refute Rava from this pasuk that refers to what Shlomo HaMelech did, that marriage alliance? Papa says you can't bring any proof from that particular pasuk. For the reality is, Shalom lo nasiv midi. It indeed was not a halachic marriage at all. Shlomo HaMelech never intended arrangement, never was to live together as man and wife. We can glean this from the pasuk there in Malachim Aleph, which states regarding Shlomo HaMelech, min hagoyim asher omer Hashem al b'nei Yisrael, lo savo v'hem v'hem lo yavo v'chem, chen yatus levavchem acharei Eloheihem bohem davak Shlomo liyava. Pasuk criticizes Shlomo HaMelech that he went and clung for love with these women who a Jew is not allowed to marry. So the pasuk is saying that he clung with them for love. In other words, this was not a marriage type of relationship. So Mar says Elakasha v'ischatin. Okay, but how does that resolve the problem that the pasuk describes the relationship with v'ischatin? I thought the Rav is saying that such language is only applicable to a halachically binding marriage. The Gemara says, "Mitoch avi yaseresh heva mala olav akosiv ki'ilu neschatin ba." Even if it normally veischatin means actual halachic marriage, here we have an exception. The pasuk wishes to convey that so great was Shlomo Melech's love for Bas Paro that the pasuk considers it as if he actually married her. So that's what it means there, but the Rav maintains that if the pasuk is teaching a halacha, saying los eschatin bam, then that could only mean do not affect actual binding marriage with them, which forces us to conclude that the prohibition to the Canaanite people intermarriage is referring to post-conversion, and thus the fact that a Ptsuvadaka man could marry this Canaanite woman, this Nesina, and it proves that he does lose his sanctity, as we explained above. So again, the Braisa rules that a Pitzuvadaka Jewish man may marry a Nesina woman. This woman descended from the Chivi Kanani nation. Amar le'Ravina le'Ravashi, we asked Ravashi, though, v'ha anan tanan, but I, we learned in our Mishnah, the Pitzuvadaka u'charus shavcha mutarim b'giyores u'mushuchreres. The Mishnah said that Pitzuvadaka u'charus shavcha, though cannot marry a regular woman from the congregation, he may marry a convert or an emancipated slave woman. Those are the only cases, exceptions that the Mishnah mentions. This appears to imply ha benesina siri, that even if it's tzvedaka, man would be forbidden to marry a nesina woman against the Braisa's ruling. Amr lei, Ravashi answers, ulitaymeich, but I'll have you consider a mesafe. Let's look at the next clause in the Mishnah, which states, "Ve'einan asurin ella milavo ba'kohal." These people of Psudaka or Chushav Chamen are only forbidden to marry into the general congregation. So this statement implies ha b'nesina sharu, but regarding a woman like a nesina, who's clearly not a regular member of the congregation, Psudaka men would be permitted to marry her. Ella meha leka l'mashemina. Since there are conflicting signals in this question, you really can't infer one way or the other from the Mishnah. And so the Mishnah doesn't pose a problem for the Braisa's ruling that a Ptsuvadaka man may marry a Nesina woman. Now we begin the next Mishnah, which states, Amoni u'moavi asurim v'isuran isra olam. A male convert from the nations of either Ammon or Moab is forbidden to marry into the congregation, and this is a permanent status that passes to all future generations. So it could be even a 10th generation Ammoni or Moavi male convert, still a Jewish woman may not marry him. The Mishnah states, Aval nekevo sehem utaros miyad. But female converts from these nations are permitted immediately. So even a first generation woman who converted from one of these nations is permitted, a Jewish man may marry her. The Mishnah continues with the halacha we mentioned above, Mitzri v'adomi eina masurim ella ad shalosh adaros. A convert from Mitzrayim or Edom is prohibited to marry into the congregation, but only up until the third generation, the grandchild of that Egyptian or Edomi convert will be permitted to marry into the congregation. As the pasuk there in Kisetze states, lo sisaev adomi ki achichahu, lo sisaev Mitzri, it continues, A third generation, a convert from one of these nations, that person may marry into the congregation of Hashem. The first opinion of the Mishnah adds that this rule applies, Echad zachar ve'echad nekevos, to either a male or female convert from one of these nations. So meaning, if an Egyptian or a Domi woman converted, only her grandchildren will be permitted to marry into the congregation. However, Rabbi Shimon matires anikevos miyad. Rabbi Shimon says that women converts from either of these nations is permitted immediately, same way that a woman convert from Ammon or Moab is permitted immediately. Amar Rabbi Shimon presents his basis. He says, kal v'chomer dvarim. Why it's a kal v'chomer? Namely, Uma im b'makom she'asar sa'zecharim yisr olam hitres nekevos miyad. If in the case of a convert from Ammon or Moab, where halach is a male convert of one of those nations is forever prohibited, him and all of his descendants, yet halach is female Ammon or Moab converts are permitted immediately, well then, makom she'lo asar sa'zecharim el ad shlosh edaros, regarding a Mitzri Edomi convert, or even in the case of males, the prohibition only lasts until the third generation. Eino din shenatres nekevos miyad. Surely then, regarding such converts, this distinction should apply, that the female should be permitted immediately. Amrlo the Rabbanan replied to Rabbi Shimon, im halacha nekabel. If you tell us that you received a specific tradition to this effect, then we would accept that. Im ladin yesh tshuva. But if your ruling is solely based upon this kal v'chomer, we wouldn't accept this ruling because the kal v'chomer could be refuted. The Gemara will explain how. Amar Lehem, Rabbi Shimon replies, lo ki. So first of all, he says, I disagree that the kal v'chomer I mentioned is vulnerable to refutation. But in any case, halacha yomer, the truth is that I didn't arrive at this ruling strictly based on my own argument, this kal v'chomer argument. I actually received this ruling as an actual tradition. This goes back through the Misara. So again, the Mishnah states that a female convert from Ammon or Moab may marry into the congregation immediately. The Gemara asks, Minahani mili, from where is this derived? Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan takes us through a whole episode in Sefer Shmuel Aleph, and in the course of the discussion, there are buttons Drusha of the whole narrative there, the source for the Mishnah's halacha is borne out. The Yomer Kra, the Pasuk in Shmuel Aleph relates how when David HaMelech bravely volunteered to take on Goliath, take on this Pelishti warrior many times his size, the Pasuk there relates of Echiros Shaul as David, Yotzi Likras HaPelishti, when Shaul HaMelech observed this, David HaMelech said, sure, I'll fight Goliath. Amar el Avner Sarat Sava. David HaMelech said to his general Avner, Ben Mizeh Hanar Avner. Avner, tell me, whose son is this? Who's the father of this lad? Vayomer Avner, and Avner replied, Chei Nafshecha Melech Im Yedati, by your life, your majesty, king, I do not know. So the Pasuk appears to say that Shaul didn't know who David was. But the Gemara points out, Veloy Adalei, could that be true? V'haksiv, the Pasuk earlier writes how David HaMelech would play the harp to cheer up Shaul, and v'yehaveu ma'od v'yehilo nosecheilem. Shaul loved David very much, and he therefore made him his armor bearer. So what is the meaning of this? Shaul know who David was. So the Gemara says, okay, maybe you'll say, Ella ahavua kamashel. Yes, Shaul know who David was, but he now wanted to know who his father was. Maybe he didn't know who David's father was, but this cannot be either. For Avili Adelei, could Shaul possibly not been aware of who David's father Yishai was? V'aksiv. Aye, it says, also there in Shmuel Aleph, V'aish b'meshol zakein ba v'anashim. And the man in the days of Shaul was old, and came along with many men, and the men accompanied him, V'amaravi timra b'yaba. He explains who is referred to in this pasuk here, Ze Yishai avi David. It is referring to David HaMelech's father, Yishai. It says he comes with men, meaning Shenichnas Beuchlusa VeYatzah Beuchlusa. Wherever he goes, it's with a whole entourage. He has many people surrounding him. He was a very distinguished person. So of course Shaul HaMelech knew David's father Yishai too. So what was he asking Avner here? So Yochanan says, Hachi Kamar. Shaul was asking Avner the following. With the Abach Zemendation here, Zil Shaul, I mi Peretz Hasi, mi Zerech Hasi. Shaul was very familiar with David and his family, but he wasn't sure about his particular ancestry, and specifically he wanted Avner to find out whether David descended from Peretz, son of Yehuda, or Zerach, son of Yehuda. Why did Shaul want to know that? For Yimi Peretz Asi Malkavi, Shaul anticipated if David descends from Peretz, from whom the line of the kings shall come, then he will be king. Shamelech Peretz Lasas Derech, the very name Peretz alludes to the fact that kings will come from Peretz, because the halacha is that a king has like eminent domain, he could smash down people's fences if he needs to make his way through there, and Meim HaMacham Yadi cannot be stopped. Whereas Imi Zerachasi, if this one descends from Zerach, the other twin from Yehuda, then Chashiva Ba'amahave, he's not going to be a king, he'll just be a distinguished person. He certainly is going to be some kind of a leader. I want to know, though, is he going to be a king? Is he from Peretz? Now, my time, Amalei Shalalei, what led Shaul to this belief that David HaMelech was going to rise to greatness, to become some important leader? The Gemara explains the Chsiv, it's because, as it's written there, Vayalve Shaul es David Madav, describes how Shaul dressed David with his own battle garments, and we darshan this word Madav to mean kimidasam, that they fit David HaMelech perfectly, which was miraculous. For Uksiv Bebeshal, it's written about Shaul, Mishichma v'mala gavoa mikol ha'am. He was taller than anybody else in the nation. He was a very, very tall man, taller than David, and yet Shaul HaMelech gave him his battle clothing. They fit David perfectly. A clear sign from Shemayim that David HaMelech was destined for greatness, some kind of royalty. Question was, is he actually going to become king? That's what Shaul HaMelech sought to find out here. And the narrative continues that at this point, Amr lo Doeg Ha'adomi. Doeg Ha'adomi, one of Shaul's advisors, chimed in and said, before you inquire as to whether David HaMelech is fit to become king, first find out if he may even marry into the congregation. My time, why do I say that he might be of tainted lineage? The Kaasi Merus HaMoaviyah, for he descends from Rus, the Moabite. She, of course, came from Moab and converted, married Boaz, and David HaMelech descends from her. So perhaps this one, this David, is not even fit to marry into the congregation, let alone become king. Amr Le, Avner replied to Doeg, Tanina Amoni v'lo Amonis, Moavi v'lo Amonis. The fact that David HaMelech's matriarch is a woman, a convert from Moab, is not a problem. Quoting the Mishnah's ruling, that only a male Moabite convert is prohibited, not a female convert, so not an issue. Doeg questioned this teaching, pointing at Elamayatim Mamzer v'lom Mamzeres. If this is a correct drasha to make from the Pasuk, why don't we similarly darshan that the Pasuk says a Mamzer, which literally is a male, Mamzer may not marry into the congregation. Why don't we infer that the female Mamzeres may marry into the congregation? Of course, that's not true. So it calls into question this whole drasha. Avner answered, Mamzer ksiv mumzar. So no, clearly we're not supposed to darshan the word Mamzer that way, because the very word Mamzer implies, it's made up of the words Mumzar, a blemish of like foreignness. So in other words, the Torah is saying that this child is considered blemish because of the illicit nature of the parents' relationship. So that the concept surely equally applies to a male or female child. So there we don't make such a drasha. But Doeg then asks, Mitzri v'lo Mitzris, if we really are supposed to darshan that says Amoni Moavi, that not Amonis, not Moavis, why don't we similarly darshan that says Mitzri, which literally is a male Egyptian convert, we should infer that a female Egyptian convert is allowed to marry into the congregation. Avna answered, Shaini Hacha, but specifically in the case of convert of Amr Moav, where we distinguish between men and women, the Mefarish time of the Kra. Because if we look in the passage there, the Pasuk itself provides the reason why we may not intermarry with the people of Amon and Moab. It says there, Al Devar Asher Lo Kidmu Eschem Balechem Vamayim. Because when you left Mitzrayim, they didn't greet you, they didn't treat you with any hospitality to come and bring you bread and water. That's why even if they convert, you can't marry them. We may thus distinguish that Darka shel ish lekadem velo darka shel isha lekadem. What we expected of the men to go and greet these arrivals, these foreigners who are traveling there, their cousins, but not expected that the women do that. But though we question this explanation, say, what do you mean? Haya lahem lekadem anoshim likas anoshim anoshim likas nashim. What do you mean? The men from these nations should have greeted the men, and the women should have came out to bread and water with things to greet, give hospitality to the women of Bnei Yisrael. So the reason for the prohibition does appear to apply even to the women. So why do we darshan that women converts of Amon and Moab are permitted? Where says Ishtik? Avner had no answer to this. Miad whereupon, Vayomer HaMelech Sha'alata Ben Mizeh Ha'olem. It says that Shaul said to Avner, go look into whose son this is. The Gemara notes, Hasim Karle Nahar Hacha Karle Elam. Previously, David is referred to by Shaul as Nahar, a lad. Here, he refers to him as Elam, as a youth. Why did he switch to this word? The Gemara explains, Hachi Kamerlei. For Shaul was saying to Avner at this point in the conversation, and Avner was sort of stumped by Doeg, wasn't clear the basis for darshaning that Moavis is not prohibited. He said, Halacha nis almin mecha, the halacha has become hidden from you. You don't know the answer exactly, so say you shall be beis medrash. Go and do further research, go and ask the scholars in the beis medrash to gain further clarity on this. The Gemara relates, Shaul, Avner did so. He went and asked about this matter of the scholars in the beis medrash, Umrulei. They replied, you want to know if it's a problem that David's matriarch is a convert from Moab, it's not a problem. From Amoni v'lo Amonis, Moavi v'lo Moavis. We darshan Moavi and not Moavis. But then continuing to Ayin Zayin, Akshilu Doeg Kolani Kushyos. The Doeg was there as well. And he asked all of his questions. They went through the same back and forth. Ishtiku. And the Chum and the Beis Medrash fell silent as well. They didn't know how to exactly answer Doeg's question, to the point that they began to consider rescinding this drasha, that okay, it seems like the drasha was not correct, and so it seems that we have to update our understanding of the halacha, that now it seems we shouldn't make the drasha, and that indeed the prohibition applies even to female convert from Moab, which would present a problem as far as the lineage of David HaMelech. And so Bailach Ruzialei, they were on the verge of making an announcement that Doeg had bested them, that now they had to update their understanding of the halacha and rule that David may not marry into the congregation. But to Miyad, before that could happen, someone else stepped in. And then where I first give some background, the Pasuk in Shmuel Beis relates that V'almasa ben ish u'shmo Yisra Yisraeli asher ba l'avigayel bas nachash. It says, Amasa was the son of a man named Yisra Yisraeli who had married Avigayel, son of Nachash. Nachash is another name for Yishai. So in other words, Yisra married David's sister Avigayel and had a son, Amasa. Now, Ksiv, the Pasuk in Divrei Hayamim Aleph writes that the name of Amasa's father was Yeser HaYishmaeli. Here it doesn't call him Yisra Yisraeli, but Yeser HaYishmaeli. Why is he referred to as Yisra Yishmaeli in this Pasuk? Amar Rav, Rava explains, Melamed. It teaches us that in this moment of crisis where they were on the verge of ruling, and David was disqualified, Shechagar Charbu Ki Yishmael. Yisra girded his sword like an Ishmaelite, Yamar, and declared, Kol mi she'inu shemea halacha zu yidaker becherev. Whoever doesn't accept the halacha I'm about to say, I will stab him with this sword. And he continued, Kach mekublani min beis dino shel Shmuel HaRamasi, I received a tradition from the Beis Din of Shmuel HaNavi himself, that this is indeed the halacha that we darshan amoni velo amonius, moavi velo moavis, that a female convert from Moab or Ammon is not prohibited to the congregation, therefore David's lineage is not tainted whatsoever. If this was an established or known tradition going back to Shmuel HaNavi, then it's something that could not be questioned, even if there was some kind of illogical objection. It would be irrelevant if this is a well-established tradition from Shmuel HaNavi. And so the crisis was averted. But the Gemara asks, Umi Mehemen, why would Yeser have a credibility for in the heat of the moment revealing this halachic ruling, this tradition? I v'ha'omer Rabbi Abba Omer Rav said halacha that kol tamid chacham shemora halachu ba, if a tamid chacham issues a novel halachic ruling, the halacha is im kodem maisa amra shomelo, if he had taught that ruling prior to the occasion which it came up, it became practically relevant, then shomelo, then we abide by that ruling, we can go with that. V'im lav in shomelo. But if not, if he apparently issued this ruling on the fly, as the issue came up, then we don't heed such a ruling, for we are concerned that he sort of just under pressure came up with the ruling. It wasn't a thought out proper ruling. So seemingly we have that type of problem here. This was in the spur of the moment, the situation arose, and all of a sudden he revealed this novel ruling. How could it be accepted? The Gemara answers, Shaini hachada shmulu beis dino kayim. Now that's not an issue here, because actually Shmuel HaNavi and his Beis Din were still alive and well active at that time. So if he's quoting halacha, he says it's from Shmuel HaNavi's Beis Din, and that could easily be confirmed. We just go to Shmuel HaNavi's Beis Din, ask whether they taught that, then that's not an issue. The Gemara now addresses Mikol Makom Kasha, but what of Doeg's question? Why indeed were the Ammon and Moab women converts not made disqualified as well, since they too should have brought out bread and water for the women of Bnei Yisrael? The Gemara answers, Hacha Targimu, here in Bavel, they answered by citing the pasuk in Tehillim, Mem Hey, where it says, Kol Kivuda Vas Melech Pinima, the honor of the princess is Pinima, is from within. That is, the proper way of modesty for women is to remain inside and not to always be going out and about. And thus, we can't really fault the Ammon and Moab women for not coming out to greet even the women. And because of Kol Kavuda, the Jewish women too probably remained inside, weren't out there, that there would be this complaint against Ammon and Moab that they didn't greet them. Or Marava Omri Vitim Rabbi Yitzchak, he derives the same lesson about modesty from a different pasuk. That is a makra. The pasuk in Vayera says, "Vayomre Elav Vayei Sara Ishtecha." How the angels asked Avraham Avinu, "Where is Sarah, your wife?" And he answered, "She is in the tent." So why does the pasuk mention this? To illustrate the modesty of Sarah Imenu, as she remained in the tent. And so once again, there could be no complaint against the women of Ammon and Moab for not greeting the women of Bnei Yisrael, because the women were inside.
You've been listening to RealClearDaf.com. Visit us online for resources or to dedicate a shiur. To speak with Rabbi Wise, call 855-ASK-RCD1. That's 855-275-7231.